Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. I hope you're ready for a thought-provoking hour. We're going to go through a few things, and I want to jump into something I really had no plan in jumping into, other than the fact that I had an opportunity, felt obligated to attend kind of a local government meeting. In the meeting was a county commissioner, a newly elected sheriff, a superintendent of a school district, as well as a prosecuting attorney. And it was kind of interesting. And I think you'll find it very interesting. But let me get to what I usually have to do before I digress too far into the entire conversation. So the important thing is that you also understand that even though Mobius Strip Press is the primary, because that's really where the bulk or the book content is, this show is also sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org, as well as RepublicReview.org, as well as 1798Part2.org. The number to call in is 215-867-8255. That's 215-TOP-TALK. I will be going through more of Trump's campaign promises today, as I promised you. Just like, you know, he's trying to keep his promises, so am I. But I hope you realize that you are listening to the only show that really, truly provides you the only constitutional solution and a bevy of other constitutional solutions that will really help America not only be great, but be great once and for all. And so let me kind of also dive forward in this, you know, kind of repetitive grind I do at the beginning of each show. And it's important because I have a video out there that will change your paradigm regarding the Constitution. It is my presentation that gives you the irrefutable argument of Republic Review. If you go watch that, go to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org, go to the Take Action page, just click on the YouTube video that I have right underneath my slides. I know it's an hour and a half. Just watch the 30 minutes. The first 30 minutes will give you everything I believe you need to really go, huh, this is a very good argument. And then dive into my documents, go into the flow chart, and refute it. But if you're going to refute it, I only ask that you cite founding documents, not precedents, not things that happened well after the, you know, a decade, 2 decades, 5 decades after the ratification. And you won't be able to find anything that actually supports any other premise other than the Constitution's a contract. The states are the arbiters, the final arbiters, and have cognizance over all things not delegated. And anything that is not delegated that is being exercised by the federal government is a usurpation of their power, period. And so the states have the authority, and they possess everything they need to go to the federal government and say, we're taking this back. You can no longer do this. This does not require a 100% majority. And so I get into the numbers, and you can go through the bullets on the front page or the home page of Reclaiming the Republic, and you'll find it all right there. So again, this is a solution-based show. We're out here trying to actually provide you with the academic evidence. As you go through this, please tell me I'm wrong. I would love to start going and doing something else and live a life of far less stress. But I don't think you're going to be able to do that. So please take the time and literally divulge these findings with all of your friends. And if you find and if you recognize the fact that we do need help, I'm not rich. I cannot subsidize this war. Washington could not, even though he was the richest man in the United States, he could not, or one of, he could not subsidize the war. he needed financial support. He didn't need a lot, and I don't need a lot either. I could probably win this war with less money than what he received. So with that, if you want to contribute, go to reclaimingtherepublic.org. On the homepage, you can get the link to the GoFundMe campaign, or go straight to GoFundMe.com and just search for Reclaiming the Republic, and it will just pop up. Boom. It's the only thing that actually asserts that. And throw us some love. If you can give us a little bit, a contribution, we would greatly appreciate it. All we're looking is just reimbursing us for the expenses for travel and those types of things. We're sucking everything else up. Literally, I'm sucking up the cost of these radio shows. I'm sucking up a lot of other things. I'm just trying to not subsidize this war 100%. And so please start looking at how you can help. And if it's financial, that'd be great. If not, just give us an email. Send us a little line, info@reclaimingtherepublic.org, and we will help you get to where you need to be so that you can become productive in helping the war. I also recommend that you go to theconstitutionclub.bing.com. There's another domain that is talking, and I've talked to them about it before. I want to start regularly plugging them too, because there's a group that is trying to actually get the First Amendment ratified. No, I mean the first that was submitted in the Bill of Rights, not the second through 12, because the 10 amendments that we have passed that is a part of the Bill of Rights were all numbers 3 through 12. The first and second ones did not pass. So there was a total of 12 amendments within the Bill of Rights. Most people do not know that. And so I kind of giggle when I hear people, well, the First Amendment was first because it was protecting speech, and the second was second because it's the thing necessary in protecting speech. And that's not, that those sound good, and it might help, you know, younger kids kind of understand what we have is first and seconds, but those really weren't the First and Second Amendment in the proposal from Congress. And so there's a First Amendment still sitting out there to wait to be ratified. But anyway, go to constitutionclub.ning.com and get involved with the Constitution Club in helping rescind the 17th Amendment. And I will give you the information, and hopefully we'll have Aaron on to talk about, you know, the plight of the first right, I believe is what it's called. And we'll get into all of that in some upcoming shows. So please stay tuned for that extra information, because both of these organizations are really defined to helping in, I'll just say, draining the swamp. If you want to literally nuke the swamp and force the federal government into the frameworks, the only solution is, that's right, Republic Review. There you go. So let me move into the obligatory, hey, I've not seen anything in the news that supports the fact that the federal government is going to relinquish, even though they may be shut down and not spending spending our tax dollars, our constitutional tax dollars, on unconstitutional government. And so, well, they still kind of are, because even some of the necessary services and so forth, many of those are still unconstitutional. So let me kind of jump into this meeting that I attended that made me think a lot. And so when you look at your county government, when you look at your local government, not your state government, but within the state, there are republics, or it is a republic, and it has sub-elements, and those sub-elements are counties. That's why there's a county court, county jail, there's, you know, county legislators or supervisors, commissioners, whatever you want to call them, but they're the sovereigns. They are the ones that create and make the laws. And so if you look at your local government, they're no different, but they just don't have the ability to make deals like the state and the federal government. So they are completely dependent on the hand-me-downs and pass-outs, because they know that there's lots of, as it was said tonight, or last night, I mean, as it was said, there's lots of nice people that will vote no on bonds and, you know, funding essential government. It's not the fact that people vote no on that. It's the problem that the government is spending tax dollars on things they shouldn't be spending tax dollars on. If you want to actually start, you know, honoring the Constitution, both the federal and the state constitutions, get the state and federal government into the alignment of their constitution so that they're not wasting your dollars so that they have to come back to you and say, well, for the kids, you know why they don't spend the money on fire, education, and police and so forth? Is because they know that those are so essential that you want them so badly that you're 9 times out of 10 willing to pay more money on your property taxes and on other tax revenue forms to fund that. So they take all the rest of that other money and they use it for things that aren't so essential. And doesn't that just irritate you? I remember San Diego for a while was literally subsidizing the San Diego Chargers. And that just infuriated the San Diegans as I was living in that area when I was in the Marine Corps and so forth. And the Spanos had a sweet deal. They had no incentive to have to win games or do anything great like win a Super Bowl. Why? Well, that was because the city was guaranteeing them a sellout crowd just so that the local people could watch it on TV. Wasn't that sweet of the local politicians? And so when I was sitting in this meeting, because I digressed on the San Diego issue, those are just the shenanigans that happen all the time. But as I was sitting in this meeting, it just became very, very clear that, you know, they're going to sit there and try to shame the voters, the electorate, into not being willing to spend more money. Well, I have something to say about that. And when we come back, we'll be able to talk about those things I have to say. So please stay tuned. And I'll be right back after this. Thank you so much. Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue.
Yeah, so this local county meeting was one of those that kind of talked about all the things that you would typically think. They, like I said, the sheriff talked about a problem with being able to staff the sheriff department with all the people they needed, getting the budget to do that. And even finding the people, because there's not a lot of people that want to do the sheriff's job, because there's wackos out there that have a vendetta against law enforcement. So they went through, like I said, this huge potpourri of or cornucopia, whatever you want to call it, a large amalgamation of problems. And the funny thing is, the majority of all of these men that I happen to know, they're good men. I wouldn't say that they're, you know, devious or anything else, but they are trapped in a paradigm, just like your politicians are trapped in a paradigm. Raise your taxes. We've got to raise your taxes so that we can provide you the necessary services. I think it's about time to start really examining alternatives. I can give you just a couple of alternatives. So some of the things that they were talking about is, you know, trying to come up with revenues. I will touch that last because that's a systemic problem. They also talk about crime and the social mores of, you know, how crime is rising, which means that they have to have more jails. If you understand and you've listened to this show, I have talked about the moral debasement of our society, and the culprit is the school system. This is a great superintendent. He's a good guy, but I'm here to tell you that he is completely lost and steeped in the biases of the school system, which he is a huge proponent for because that's his job. So some of these things that I'm going to talk about, and let's just focus on the sheriff, and let's just focus on your sheriff because it's probably the same thing. He just doesn't have the budget. He can't dedicate resources out far enough. You got to understand that some of these monies and some of the deals that come into these sheriffs, I mean, if you're a real rural sheriff, you're really hurting. If you are in a rural area, that sheriff is struggling because the federal government, the state government has done a great job in shutting down revenues. I'll get into that in a minute. But they really basically put a stranglehold that forces the people to have to pay more money on taxes out in the rural area. And it's almost getting to the point where you go, well, I might as well move to the city because life's cheaper there because there's plenty of resources and everything else. They are deliberately trying to starve the money and resources in these rural areas. That's a part of the Agenda 2030, 21, whatever you want to call it. It is the globalist agenda in trying to strangle commerce and trying to strangle the economy of all of these small counties, or I should say rural counties. And so the sheriff, you know, doesn't have the resource, doesn't have the manpower. They, you know, they want to operate the way they operate and so forth. They're stuck in a paradigm because they believe that they're the only game in town. Now, let's just talk real quick about the penal problem, or I should say the penal system problem with not enough jails because crime is going through the roof. This begs the opportunity for private enterprise to step in and say, we believe we can provide you the housing necessary at a cheaper cost. Maybe some of the labor will be done without union. Maybe, you know, a lot of it can be done robotically so that they don't have to have so many jailers that get involved. Maybe they can do it so that they can make it where there is the, what do they call that? That the marginal cost is at the lowest possibility. So because if they can do the numbers high enough, then maybe they can do that. It is time we start actually accepting the fact that we're in the 21st century. Law enforcement, prosecutors, court systems, and so forth. Our penal system and our judiciary system of filing charges against these folks, it shouldn't be this difficult. Why is it? Because I love the idea of actually shipping a crime. You get busted, you don't go to a local jail. You actually get shipped overseas. You go to a different country, and we use a virtual court system so that you can sit there and watch the lawyer appointed to you, or, you know, you can hire your own lawyer. But bottom line, everything is done virtually. That would bring down costs dramatically by letting you stay in a low-cost rent jail if you happen to be the criminal. It's the same thing, though. We can have, you know, the temporary holdings and so forth. But instead of having them in each county, start, you know, joining counties so you can have the numbers necessary, because you don't necessarily always have maximum occupancy. Like in some of these counties, it may be 60 people in jail, it may be 40, maybe 30. Whatever your high stake number is, you just need to have a jail system that can guarantee you what you believe your high forecast is, and then literally let them do all of the lodging of these criminals. In doing that, by putting them all from a quad, you know, a sextuplet, or how many counties you can kind of stitch together, in providing a just a huge super center of, you know, cheap housing for these criminals. And everybody shares the cost of having maybe some medical staff either close by or on call or what have you, or even permanently there, whatever. But we need to start making it so that we don't have to have people doing these things, that this can either be done by a, I don't want to say robots, but it can be done by minimal manning staffing, where you don't need that many people. And you can put sensors and those types of things throughout this and use technology to ensure that you have the people accounted for when you need to account for them. And bottom line, these are just temporary holding centers to get these people through the system to go off to the, you know, the hard house, or the, you know, the I don't want to say the nut house, but, you know, where they incarcerate people for long periods of time called penitentiaries. But that requires people to start thinking outside the box instead of, well, this is how we do it. And I'm tired of hearing politicians say that. If you're in the corporate world, if you're in the private sector, this is how we does it. This is how we do it. Does not fly. We have to start thinking constantly in new opportunities to exploit or going in different directions. We've got to start doing and doing better and thinking outside the box. There are even more things like that just on the law enforcement side. And as far as having the staffing and so forth, heck, privatize that too. Most of the money probably goes towards the unions, or I should say in the labor side of it, it's pretty expensive. And getting non-union folks in there would probably be better, especially if you have two different types of teams. And as a matter of fact, I would like to actually see the constitutional solution come into where we start actually having militias standing up, because militias are the constitutional process of not only, you know, for crowd suppression as well as, you know, responding to national needs, but they also have a, let's just call it a baked in need to ensure that their area is secure and that they can have, you know, tranquility and law abiding citizens and so forth. If you grow the militia to the sizes that they need to and quit spending the federal dollars on the sheriffs and, you know, community law enforcement for these small cities, big cities, what have you, you're going to find that there are far more people that are volunteering, that are willing to be a part of the solution instead of having these, let's just say, you know, really nice cush, or you want to, I don't want to call law enforcement cush, but they definitely have some benefits as well as the opportunity to retire at a pretty young age for a pretty nice, handsome salary. I don't want to besmirch them of that, but they're in the public sector and they're not entitled to that. What they need to get through their brain housing group is the concept that, you know, we have to do this at the bottom cost without really overstepping the line of humanity and our compassion towards some of these people that might actually have some good in them, because we can't judge them as all bad. But we cannot just kowtow to these folks. So anyway, that was just one side of it. It's the same thing with the fire department and same thing with, you know, the education system. Well, we need more money. If you want us to put out fires, you've got to pay more money. That's not acceptable. And some of this stuff, again, let's think out of the box. How many of these things can be done outside of, you know, the status quo. This is how we do it. On the school system alone, I'm a huge advocate for probably the best education system out there, and that is homeschooling. Just go listen to my podcast on December, how I point to, and every time there's a school shooting, I point to the culprit, not as the gun, not as the race or demographics of the individuals. It is the school system. They have been pumping out immoral people into the electorate for decades, and that comes with consequences. We have to clean up the school, and the best way to do that so that we can take back our mores in society is, well, it's one of those things that I'm going to have to tell you when we come back from this break. So maybe I did this to, you know, to kind of hold you over, but please stay tuned, and we're going to get into how we can really start calling, you know, talking about the elephant in the room, especially when it comes to education. So please stay tuned, and we'll be right back after this. The reason progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost every billionaire in the world is funding a vast array of different groups, and these groups' efforts are to undermine our republic and our constitution. If you don't believe me, just Google donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to successfully combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, healthcare, state lands, housing, labor, and many other roles, responsibilities and powers that belong to the states, is by you and I and local businesses getting involved in supporting political programs and efforts based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review. So please consider contributing to the show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to reclaimingtherepublic.org and go to the contribution page, and you can become a listed supporter of liberty. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
And so what is that elephant in the room that we're not talking about? What is that one thing? And obviously, you know that the school system is the culprit in indoctrinating and basically turning our children into their useful idiots. We need to start thinking out of the box, and actually we need to start relying on the things that actually worked before. If you understand the education system for the framers, it was literally homeschooling. Why is it that we're not incentivizing homeschooling? Why not make it so attractive? Because you know what? You can get rid of the bureaucracy. If you, I forget the name of the movie, Looking for Superman, I think was the name of the movie, and it was all about the education system. And if you understand that this, these superintendents, the school boards themselves make a lot of money, that's nice. I'm not besmirching people that make a lot of money. But the fact is that these are public service jobs, and it's not about giving them cush salaries and those things. And I have a hard time understanding how a superintendent, or I should say people in the school boards, are making more money than nurses who save lives or other people that do really critical services that have to have, you know, a bunch of certifications and everything else. These educators, I hate to say it, they don't deserve the money that they're getting. They have created a beautiful self-licking ice cream cone just for themselves. And the fact is that they've been failing society for decades because our education system is pumping out more and more dolts by the year than we deserve. And so it's time that we actually start, I don't want to say poke them in the eye, but maybe push them over, then poke them in the eye, because they're doing us a huge disservice. So again, we need to start looking at incentivizing kids, or I should say parents, in keeping their kids at home because they can get a far better education at home. It's hands down. If you look at who are the top educated group out of a school system, it is homeschoolers. I mean, these kids are already being pre-placed in you know, colleges before they even graduate, because they're already engaging in higher education in the disciplines that aren't socially oriented, like social engineering crap. You know, these kids are actually learning mathematics and sciences and so forth that actually, you know, just it, they literally outperform those kids that are in the education system. So why is it that we're trying to cling on to these things? If we're going to have public education, though, if we're going to have these edifices that are supporting the education of young children, then I honestly think, and this was something that Dirk Flint was going to help me write. He was going to co-write the book, Education and the Self-Licking Ice Cream Cone. That's a future coming book as soon as we get Republic Review moving. But in this book, we were going to talk about, and I've talked to him about it. He loved it. He's an educator from Oklahoma. He passed away from cancer this past year, and God bless his family. And I hope they're at the comfort point that they need to be. And so one of the things that we both agreed upon, I mean, he really didn't even think of this until we started talking. I said, this is exactly how we have to do it, because that's how it was. And he goes, you're absolutely right. I completely agree with that. He wasn't a fan of charter schools. He wasn't a fan of, you know, all these different spins on public education. And the best thing we can do is take, or actually abandon, the education system and bring the churches in out of the state. I mean, let's say you got 20% evangelical, and let's say you have 20% Mormon, and let's say you have 30% Catholic, and you have, you know, what would that rest be? Well, that would be maybe 15% of Protestant and maybe 10% of this and 5% of outliers. Okay, so you break down the populace of the people in the education or in your state and say, okay, Catholics, we're going to give you these schools, and literally just hand over, not giving them, granting them, but letting them take over the facilities and so forth. Because you got to understand that they're not profit driven. They are going to do everything they can to keep their costs low because they're nonprofit oriented. Even though public education and these school systems aren't profit oriented, it doesn't mean that they don't have avarice and designs to have, you know, the nicest athletic fields. Oh, it's all for the children. And some of those things do not merit, or either they don't provide, there's no evidence that provides the necessity or the real return on investment in spending all that kind of money, other than the fact that, oh, well, we want to have the best for our kids here, right? And so we need to start thinking again out of the box. So giving these, you know, different churches, you know, opportunities to take over. And you can even open it up and say, whoever performs the best, we'll actually, you know, reallocate these to you. And it will literally become a field of competition of keeping costs down and keeping the education productivity up. Now you don't even have to buy that book, right? There's a lot of, how do we get there? There's a lot of those types of details that we have to put in this book. And again, I'm really sorry that I missed that opportunity with Dirk. But there's no doubt in my mind that when you start looking at those who really care for the children and who really want the best for them, you're going to find that the top, the number one place for kids in learning is in the home. The second best place would probably be in the churches with self-minded and or like-minded people trying to reinforce doctrines and those types of things. Should we allow kids to be exposed to doctrine? Why not? We're exposing them to pedophilia, bestiality, and all of these other perverse things. Are you telling me that that's better than religion? Now, I know the secular progressives will literally go into a tizzy. They will have this huge tantrum. No, we can't do that. Did you know these kids are highly impressionable? Yeah, we do. And that's why you've been successfully, you know, indoctrinating them into getting them to believe and buying into all of this godless, immoral crap. Well, let's start, you know, not letting that happen anymore. And so in this conversation with these county officials, it was obvious that they were walking around the real problem. And the real problem is that most all of the problems we're dealing with directly has a connection to the federal government and doing things that they shouldn't be doing, as well as the education system itself in literally creating dolts, like I say, idiots, and going into the electorate and just meandering in life, ending up on drugs. And they are literally successfully destroying our nation by destroying the family and destroying our morals. And that is our education system. We have to turn this. We can turn this around. So it's like I said, it's about time we start really looking at these things. And so when we actually look at the cost of things, one of the things they mentioned was let's raise sales tax. Are you kidding me? If anybody understands anything, your county probably has natural resources that could easily be, I don't want to say exploited, but can easily be tapped in providing revenues as businesses would come in and let's say it's lumber. Let's say it is mining minerals. Let's say it is manufacturing. Regardless of what it is, if we get the federal government out of the regulation business of saying you can't do these things because you don't own this, because these are all unconstitutional. Once we get Republic Review moved, or I should moving forward and getting government moved out of the way, the counties and the states will be able to literally unleash and harness all sorts of resources that are possessed by the state and be able to, you know, let's just call it a windfall. Let's call it an opportunity of growing the infrastructure and all of those types of things out of that instead of assessing, because I truly believe there's nothing more immoral than having tax on a home because it never goes away. I believe there ought to be a law that keeps people from having to pay property tax after a certain age. If you do not have income, you know, from working and you're living off of Social Security and some meager retirement and what have you, you should be not exonerated. You should be exempt from having to pay any type of, so let's say you're still paying a mortgage because, you know, you weren't making enough money to get that done by the time you retired. People should be exempt. There should be nobody that loses their home because the state wants money out of your hide. You need to be exempt, and the state needs to start looking at this fact of going, this is an immoral thing we're doing in literally taking homes away from people or kicking people out of their homes that they've had. They've raised their families and everything else, and now you can't keep that home just because, well, you know, we need money out of you and we want to assess a tax against that. There are other ways, and unleashing the resources by cutting all the federal strings and regulations, get rid of all of them because they're all unconstitutional. period. They do not have any authority to keep you from mining, keep you from your lumber and the resources that are naturally innate within your community. So with that, folks, I kind of squandered my first three segments on this issue, so we'll be right back after this with some more Trump promises. And maybe I'll get into this a little bit more tomorrow on the counties. We'll be right back.
Are you a patriotic proprietor of a business that is looking to get exposure on a fast-growing program? How would you like to get exposure on the only program on the air that provides an actual constitutional solution to all the federal government overreach and encroachments? If you understand the importance of educating the electorate, we would love to work with you in growing your business and revenues while you support the airing of our content on this station. Your support goes to growing the reach of this show and does not pay for elaborate salaries or highfalutin lifestyles. The show is growing fast, and we're also planning on airing the content about Republic Review on a video medium soon. If you'd like to be a part of history and the growth of the most relevant and result-oriented show on the air anywhere in the world, then just email me at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can lock in exceptional pricing and great advertising opportunities. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.
Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255. Seriously, you really should go back and listen to my December and November podcast. I mean, actually, you should listen to all of my podcasts. But when I talk about the education system, this just hits the nail on the head, that it is a part of the progressive efforts in trying to destroy the family. If you happen to have any morals, you happen to be religious of any type of degree, especially Christian, you will find that they are teaching your kids to actually hate you, especially the man of the house. If you have a whole intact family, the kids are being programmed to hate the man, you know, because that's where all of our problems came from, you know, just like the Gillette commercial, just like all of these misandrist policies and programs and paradigms, the three P's. And so if you understand what the heck is going on, then you can really point the finger and literally, we have to abolish the national and even the state education system. We need to get it back to the lowest local level we possibly can and say, this is what is best. If you want to make America competitive in education again, this is what we have to do. Now, onto the Trump campaigns by Jenna Johnson, you know, a progressive axe grinder. We're going to start off with promise number 30 of 228 because we've already made it through the first 29. And so this promise, 30, is eliminate the carried interest loop for, or the loophole, I should say, sorry, interest loophole for Wall Street, the federal estate tax, the alternative minimum, and the so-called marriage penalty that affects some high-income earners. Continue to allow taxpayers to deduct mortgage interest and charitable donations from their taxes. And so, but not state taxes. And so that's what I was telling you. That's why a lot of people are complaining because, yeah, I can't write off my state tax. Well, no. We should not be subsidizing your socialistic state. Your socialistic state is ruining the rest of the republic because it is handing out all of these things and people are coming to the other state saying, well, why can't we have this? Because we get it over there. Or some of these other concepts of laws, policies, and so forth that they do within those states on spending money for indolence, welfare, you know, giving you know, druggies access to needles, safe injection centers. Are you kidding me? We've got to stop this mollycoddling of those people who want to check out. We can't do that. We can't afford that. There are other things, and the best institutions in handling those types of things are churches, period. Hands down, that's how it has to be done. So the next and last thing under the tax, you know, portion of this is number 31. We're going to have the biggest tax cuts since Ronald Reagan. Well, actually, we've had the first tax cuts since Ronald Reagan, and they are the biggest because they're the first. But Trump is actually correct. And those things are good things because those things unleash the economy. Now the next set or the mood of questions are on trade. So question number 32, renegotiate the NAFTA agreement or withdraw from the deal under Article 2205. And I'm telling you, he's made good on this. I'm not necessarily happy with the UC or USMCA, which is the United States, Mexico, and Canada agreement. I think that there are problems with it. It's got the Agenda 21 in it, or 2030, whatever you want to call it. But it definitely is a bad, it stinks. And we need to do something. At least he did make promise, you know, he made true on the promise that he was going to end that and or renegotiate it. But I don't think he did us any service. Because the NAFTA is better than the deal we're getting. So we need to go revisit and go back to that. On the first day in office, pull out of the Trans-Pacific Partnership, President Obama's signature trade deal linking countries around the Pacific Rim. I think that was a good idea. I think it was a good motive, and he's done that. We've basically pulled out of that. These are all good promises. 34, negotiate trade deals with individual countries instead of regions. Trump would rather gather together the smartest negotiators in the world and assign them each a country, you know, like a billionaire hedge fund manager, Carl Icahn, I know I mispronounced that because I'm bad on names, who would be in charge of trade negotiations with, you know, China and Japan, the Asian markets. Identify a foreign trading abuses that affect American workers and use every tool under American and international law to end those abuses immediately. This would include cracking down on sweatshops in Mexico and undercut U.S. workers, and more importantly, the sweatshops that are going on in China. I mean, they are the worst when it comes down to exploiting people and their human capital. 36, impose new taxes on imports into the country from the companies that used to be based in the United States. And Trump is doing that. And I'm actually in favor of that because I don't think we necessarily need to incentivize people to take away jobs and to move to another country so that they can, you know, so they can improve their bottom line. I would also like to say that in doing, you know, these types of leverages against these companies, the federal government really doesn't have the ability to do some of these things. They do have the ability to tax them, but they can't necessarily, you know, say you can't go and penalize them. So he's going to have a problem with this. But it is a promise that he's actually been keeping, even though, again, some of these things are unconstitutional. 37, impose a 45% tariff on Chinese products imported into the United States. And he hasn't done that, but he should. he should actually, and I've talked about this whole process, it doesn't have to be tariffs, it can be imposts. And the imposts can be across the board and reactive, automatically reactive to every time China increases their, you know, a tariff on these goods or this and these items, then we can retroactively cancel those by automatically raising and lowering base. If China wants to finally start playing fair and start looking at, you know, having a good relationship instead of a hostile relationship, then they will start, you know, wiping out and opening up their trade so that they're no longer protected and that we're subsidizing communism in China anymore. Then I honestly think that automating that will force them to do that, and it'll actually force them to come to an, you know, what we would call a level playing field or an equalized playing field. So the next set of questions, or I should say promises, are under the category of economy and federal budget. So how much of this is constitutional? That's going to be a good question, isn't it? We will double our growth and have the strongest economy anywhere in the world. Grow the nation's economy by at least 4% per year, although Trump has also suggested he will boost growth to at least 6% a year, if not higher. Now, I think he did get 4%, I think, was it last year or maybe 17 and 18? So he's been doing good. He's been doing better than Obama, who's been stifling the economy and business and has never been a friend of, you know, free enterprise as well as, you know, successful companies and so forth. The next one, 39, eliminate the $19 trillion national debt within 8 years by vigorously eliminating waste, fraud, and abuses in the federal government, ending redundant government programs, and growing the economy to increase tax revenue. That's not going to do it. That's to me, that's just a bunch of rhetoric. If he wants to actually eliminate the $19 trillion in debt, get the federal government to do the things that it should be doing per the Constitution and stop doing those things that it shouldn't, and he will find that, literally he can get the federal government into compliance and spending, dramatically less money and pay that off, and he could actually do it in probably less than 8 years like he was talking about. Because if you understand, I think on the revenues alone, I believe we're somewhere around, help me out here, it's $2 to $3 trillion a year. Over 80% of the money we spend, which is about $4 to $5 trillion, over 80% of that's on unconstitutional government. So let's just say $5 trillion. That means only $1 trillion, you know, that's coming in, or I should say that's going out, only $1 trillion, because that's one fifth of five, right? So only $1 trillion is actually going out on the constitutional stuff. The $2 to $3 trillion, that means that, you know, we should probably, you know, if you cut it in half, it would be about 8 or 9 years to literally pay off that debt, especially when you start, you know, actualizing some of these other debts and so forth and just end these stupid programs and be done with it and give everything back to the states and let the states do what they can and what they need to do. Number 40 on the list here, never default on this debt, as the United States can print the money or renegotiate the amount owed with creditors as the self-described king of debt. And this, because he's done that with his own business. I am G.R. Mobley, and I know Trump has been good on his promises, and I'm being good on trying to save the Republic, but I need your help. So please stay tuned, and we will be back tomorrow, same time. God bless, and have a good evening.
Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcast and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Mobiusstrip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Mobiusstrip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you.